Welcome to the bookshelf and three nights of stories from Pivot that took place on February 6th under the topic of Hooked. Tomorrow we'll hear from Tyler Hobbs and Brent Birch, and on Wednesday from Julie Stratton and Mandy Manning. Tonight it's Ryan Tucker, Kate Burke, and Josh Porter. To tonight's host, Sam Schneider.
Ryan Dean Tucker is the host of Lilac City Live, which if you have not been to, you should. It is amazing. February 20th. He is also the host of Saturday Night Cinema. He orchestrated and performed live in the stage versions of Seinfeld, Friends, Die Hard, and Back to the Future, which I wish that I had seen. I hope he does it again. And he's going to tell us about, sometimes when you are going to get a new car, it's not exactly what you expect it to be.
Thank you. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, everybody on Pivot for inviting me to do this. It's great. I decided to move to LA and go to film school pretty much right after 9/11. And I moved there and hung out there and got some roommates. And I met a guy that I was living with. And he showed me how to hitchhike. And I got really into hitchhiking. And we hitchhiked to San Francisco. And we hitchhiked from LA to here, Spokane. And it was like the coolest thing to me. And I would like read Bukowski and Kerouac and be like, man, I'm so cool. But I really just liked doing it. And then I got another roommate who got a job that he needed to go a lot of different locations. So I let him use my car. And he would drop me off at work. And I would hitchhike home, because I liked hitchhiking. I was hooked, you could say. But it was weird, because I worked at Nordstrom, so like, a guy in a suit, like, it was like the fanciest transient ever. But anyway, it came in handy, because I had a really crummy white 80s Subaru that was falling apart, and my mom found a new car for me up here in Spokane. So it's 20 hours to drive from where I was at in California to Spokane, and I was going to do it in one straight shot. And I got all ready and drove really early in the morning, and there was a bunch of wildfires because it was summertime in California, and so it's behind quite a bit already. And by the time I actually got going, it was already afternoon. And so I'm cruising along, feeling pretty good, and my car just dies. I can't give it any, it's not doing anything when I push the gas button. And I know a lot about cars, so so I pulled over, and I'm in Death Valley at this point, and there's nothing in Death Valley. They named it for a reason. But there's overpasses, so there's off-ramps, but it goes to nothing. There's no streetlights. It's just nonsense. But I parked underneath the bridge so I'd have some shade, and I was like, hey, this'll be okay. Just, it's hot out here. Again, I'm really like a mechanic. So I got back in the car after reading a comic book, and it started up, and I was like, great. So I went a few more miles, and then it died again. And I was like, ah, shoot. I guess I need to go buy some coolant. Parked it underneath another bridge in the shade, and then just started hitchhiking just to get to the next gas station that had coolant. I don't know what coolant was going to do to my car, but hitchhiking. Nobody's picking me up. I'm wearing a bright orange shirt and jeans, and I'm just like, what is going on? Nothing happening. And then finally, a white car with Iowa plates pulls over, and I go running up, and I'm really used to hitchhiking at this point, and I just jump right in, and he just goes, and this guy is sweating profusely, and he's white-knuckled on the steering wheel, and the console is filled with cigarette butts. Not the ashtray, the console. And it reeks, and he is sweating, and he has not made eye contact with me. I got in the car, and he went, and that was it. And I said, hey, if you could just stop me at the next gas station, that would be really terrific. Thanks. And he didn't reply. And And I was like, so where are you headed? And there's like no reply. And I'm like, I'm going to die. then I said, because I'm a nervous talker, I was like, so what part of Iowa are you from? And he turns to me and goes, who the f*** told you I'm from Iowa? I said, nobody. I saw the plates on your car. And he goes, oh, this isn't my car. Okay. So I stopped talking. And then we go for about 30 miles, 25, 30 miles. And there's a gas station coming up. And I'm like, hey, great, right here would be really good. Right back there. Just go ahead and stop anytime. And he goes, oh, I'll just take you to the next one. It's only another like 40 miles. And I was like, and he goes, ah, I'm just messing with you, and punches me a bunch, and we're going 70 miles an hour, and he jumps into the median, like crosses the freeway, like a U-turn on the 5. It was insane, and dirt goes flying up, and I'm like, oh my God, drops me off, says see you later, and starts heading south. Okay, I buy coolant. And that's it, because I'm an idiot, and I'm 21 years old. And I'm walking back to my car. Nobody wants to give me a ride. I later find out that that's where, like, I think Folsom Prison is, the orange shirt. Not a good look. And I'm walking back, and now it's dark. It's very late, and there is no street lights. If there's no cars around, I cannot see anything around me. It is pitch black, and there's I'm dehydrated. I'm hot, and now I'm cold because I've gotten rid of everything, and it's nighttime in the desert, and I hear noises and animals, and I'm crying, and I'm laughing, and I'm delirious and insane, and I'm singing really loud because I don't want anybody to kill me or anything. And I thought I had seen, I thought I parked my car 5 overpass bridges away, and I got to the 5th one, and it wasn't there, and I was like, okay, I'll go one more. And I got to one more, and it wasn't there. And I was like, there's no way I walked by my car, did it? Because I'm on the other side of the freeway now. And I was like, so I go, well, I'm gonna go one more, and then I'll just die in the desert. So I went one more, and I saw the yellow flashing lights of the tow truck, and so I went running with like all the last bit of strength I had, and I'm getting there, and he's pulling away right when I'm like 20 feet away. And I'm like, you gotta stop. And the guy gets out, and he goes, oh, I thought you was a coyote. I was gonna run you over. And I was like, no, I'm not. Thank you. Can you tow my, have you seen a white Subaru? He goes, yeah, it's over there. I go, great. Can you tow it for me to the gas station? He goes, yeah, it's gonna be $250 and $300 to get home. So that was pretty much all of my money. So we got it there, but it's the middle of the night. He goes, the place doesn't open until 6. I go, great, I should be home by now. I'm gonna call my mom. And I went to the Carl's Jr. and bought a big, huge soda, because soda's what you need when you're dehydrated. Got a soda, and I go, you have a payphone? I use the payphone, and I go, mom, I'm sorry. I don't know, I'm in some kettle town city in California. My car died, I don't know what's happening. And it goes click. Not like deposit more money. Click, dial tone, your phone call's over. And I was like, and I put more money in, and I'm like, mom, I don't know what's wrong with this phone. I don't know where I'm at. Click. I just start bashing the receiver into the phone, and the Carl's Jr. guy comes out, and he's like, what's going on? And I go, your phone doesn't work. And he goes, ah, use the other phone at the gas station. I'm like, ah, and I go, okay. And I go around the back of it, and it's dark out, and I'm like huffing and puffing, and I walk like the coyote in a Roadrunner cartoon off of a 15-foot ledge. I swear to God, there was like a moment where I was walking on the air, and I held up a sign that said, yikes. And I fell so hard and like got cut up and was just crushed, and I rolled over, and the soda I had bought fell on my face. And then I laid there and fell asleep and woke up in the morning, and they said my car had cracked the engine block. My mom bought me a ticket, and I hitchhiked back to LAX and flew home.
I love that story. I love the image of a kid walking down the highway with antifreeze. It's going to fix his cracked engine block. So tonight, I have the honor and privilege of introducing a couple of my personal heroes. And I say that in all sincerity. One of them is Kate Burke. So if you don't know who Kate Burke is one of our Spokane city councilors. She truly spends her time trying to make this a better place to live. So it is my privilege to introduce Kate, who's going to tell us how she wasn't born a city councilor. She had a path to travel to get here, so her path started with basketball.
Thank you for having me. So he took my punchline, basketball, but I'll still tell the story. When I was a little girl, all I ever wanted to be was a WNBA basketball player. Yeah, I got those laughs a lot when I was little. But part of me was absolutely pissed off that women made less money than the men, but I still wanted to do it. And so I forged forward and started a career in basketball in kindergarten. And I had a very successful supportive family taking me to all of the tournaments and the games and coming to every single sporting event I had, and I was so excited and feeling really energetic around it, and I was ready to play and get involved, and so I played all the way up into high school. And when I was a sophomore, the game before I was moving up to varsity, I was playing really well, and I had a terrible injury. I tore all the ligaments in my ankle, and I don't know if you've ever torn all the ligaments in your ankle. But there's not a lot you can do after that. And so a lot of sitting around. And so that's when I started to read. And I realized there was a little bit of a life outside of basketball. No offense. And so I read and I started learning about food injustices and food security and where food comes from. And from there, a life of food justice took me to a cooperative farm in Burlington, Vermont, and working at the number one greenest restaurant in America in Chicago. And then I inevitably made it back to Spokane and I took a job as an AmeriCorps Vista. And I worked at Second Harvest trying to bring in fresh produce to the food banks. And my job was to work with local gardeners and farmers to encourage them to plant extra, and then I would bring volunteers to glean the extra produce and donate it to food banks. And there were 10 AmeriCorps Vistas in Washington State doing this work. And I just remember one summer, we were harvesting at a farm kind of over in close to Cheney, and I don't know if you've ever harvested carrots, but probably one of the best smells you'll ever smell in your life. As you pull the carrot out of the kind of damp earth, it's one of the most refreshing smells ever. And so I'm harvesting carrots, and I'm thinking to myself, well, this program's only been around for a few years. And why has it only been around for a few years? It seems like, you know, we're really doing all this good work and feeding all these really great, you know, all these families. And so I asked the question, and it was actually a statewide law change. There used to be a liability on the farmers. If they donated produce to the food banks, there was a liability on them, and so none of them were doing it. And now that we changed that law, we were feeding millions of families this fresh, organic whole foods. And I was just like, policy. And so so I started, you know, calling politicians, getting involved, working on campaigns, ended up working in Olympia for a state senator for 4 years. And after that, I decided I was ready to run for office. And I took it, I ran for city council, and I won. Thank you. And I thought that this was the time where I was going to make the change. And so I started writing policies. And they got deferred. So I started writing some other policies. And they got deferred. Wrote a few more policies. Got deferred. And I thought, oh, crap. Have I wasted this time and energy, you know, similar to my family investing in me to sports, have I wasted the time and energy of my community running for office and getting here and getting to this place and just feeling this kind of emptiness again, like I felt when I couldn't play basketball anymore. And that sat with me for a while. And a few months after that, I started receiving phone calls and emails. And there was a apartment complex in my district, the Vintage Apartments. It was a senior housing facility. And they had received a rent increase in early part of the year, and they were receiving another rent increase. And they were very vulnerable and fearful. And so they called my office, and they said, what can you do? And I said, well, I can't write policy. What else can I do? And so they encouraged me to meet with them. And during that time, I thought, well, what else can I do for you? You know what works sometimes is I write a press release, and the news covers it. Maybe I could write a press release for you. And they said, okay, do it. Do whatever you do, we just need to get the word out about this. This is horrible. This is an injustice. And we're struggling as, you know, seniors. And so I wrote a press release and decided to have a meeting. And so I gathered all of the seniors in a room similar to this size. And they all came down, and the news was there, and they recorded it. And they asked all of these seniors about their story and what they were going through. And there was tears, and there was fear, and there was just all of these horrible experiences that these people were going through. And as the news left, I sat with these seniors, and I didn't know what to do. I was feeling a little that kind of pit in my stomach again of, oh, I wish I could do more. I wish I could do more. And they were sitting there, and they said, you know what you could do, Kate? You could write a letter to our landlords. You know, they're in California, and you could write a letter to them. And so we sat down, and we all got together, and we started writing a letter. We drafted it out. We put in some emotional aspects to what was going on, and we all sat down and wrote it, and they decided they were going to write one as well. And so we packaged them all up together and signed it and sent it off. I was like, I did all I could. And I walked away, and I, you know, just wish I could have helped them more. And a few weeks later, I received a phone call, and it was the property manager calling from California. And he said, we received your letter in the mail, and I wanted to let you know we're rescinding the rent increases. Thank you. And I realized at that moment that I was able to use my platform and my position to work with the people. And they were the ones that came to me and encouraged me to do this. And so I still get that sadness and that sickness and that pit in my stomach, probably more often than not, about being in the wrong place on city council. But I know deep down that I don't necessarily have to pass every single policy to make everybody's lives better, because the power is in the people, and that's what I hold. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. That was awesome. Joshua Porter is an international educational professional and philanthrope, active in Eastern Washington refugee, immigrant, and asylee communities. He curates discussion and opportunities for solutions with education, healthcare, and our community. He's going to share with us another crazy adventure story that began and ended someplace you'd never expect. Here we go. Josh, big hand.
The only thing more boring than doing your taxes is filling out a survey about doing your taxes. And there I was, filling out a survey about doing my taxes. I was 21 years old, and I thought, maybe this is just part of the process. Most of the questions were innocuous. Do you like doing taxes? No. Who does? But then it got a little strange. It was like, what kind of animal would you be? A little odd, H&R Block, but marsupial, moving on. And I realized I chose marsupial. That's just a type of animal. Pouches, right? I didn't even go kangaroo, or I just went, yeah, nature's fanny pack. Let's do this. And I think nothing of it after that. But a few days go by, and I get an email, and they say, we want to do a Skype interview. I'm like, okay, is this how you don't get audited? So I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, whatever you say, tax man. And I do the interview, it's the same questions, and so I give the same answers. And then I let it go, and a few more days pass, and they say, we want to fly, I get another email. And in that email it says, we want to fly you down to Hollywood, California, first class, five-star hotel, and we're going to pay you to be in a commercial. I'm like, great, it's winning a free trip to Hollywood. I've never been to Hollywood. Yes, I'm in 100%. So I'm excited, and I go and tell my mom, and she says, no, it's a scam. You're going to be sex trafficked. I don't even know how to respond to that. And you have to understand, my mom is a sweet, sweet lady. She just watched too much true crime. You know, Dateline, she thinks I'm gonna get kidnapped at every corner. My brother and I had to hold hands crossing the street until we could vote. But I eventually convinced her. I, you know, go online and show her it's a real thing. And next thing I know, I'm flying to Hollywood. And I land, and there's a well-dressed man in a black suit, and he says, Mr. Porter, he's holding a sign with my name, I'm your driver. Yeah, right? I am so excited, I have a driver. So we drive to the studio, and we talk, chit-chat, and I find out he's also the driver for David Schwimmer. You know, Ross from Friends? Like, I'm one of the Friends, this is great. So I get even more excited. And they take me to the studio, and it's massive. There's these big lots and security and, I don't know, big buildings with Hollywood hobbits doing their Hollywood magic. And I get to the place, and I meet a bunch of people, and I'm sitting there kind of waiting for the next step. And I say to no one in particular, under my breath, I should have grabbed my cough drops. I was kind of recovering from a cold. My voice felt all scratchy. And 30 seconds go by. And this kid pops in the door and is like, Josh, cough drops, you want cough drops? And he's holding a bag of Halls. And I'm like, how deep does this Hollywood magic go? I wish I would have brought my chest full of treasures and gold and diamonds. Can I make that come through the door? And so the assistant director comes over and plops down this contract, and I don't read a page of it, it's thick. I just flip to where I sign my name, because, you know, it's Hollywood. They have my best interest at heart, right? And then I'm taken off to wardrobe, and they want to fit me, and there's two well-dressed, elegant women who are either side of me, and I'm sitting in a makeup chair, and they're dusting me and looking at me and holding up jackets, and they decide what I'm wearing is perfect. It looks just curated enough to be ragged and unplanned. And one of them leans over and says, oh my God, I love your scarf. Who's it by? And that question throws me entirely. I'm like, by? It's by me. I'm wearing it. I bought it. Do you not know how to speak in Hollywood? What is this? And I realize, and I say, oh, you think this is designer? No. I got this for $2 at a thrift store in Spokane. And this is pre-Macklemore, so that is not the cool answer. And they're silent the rest of the time, and I'm silent because I don't know what to do, and I'm like, okay, and that awkward silence drags on. I go back, and the assistant director tells me, it's late in the day. We're not gonna film tomorrow, so we're gonna bring you back day after tomorrow at 6 a.m. call time. Just be here, your driver will pick you up. You can just hang out at the hotel, you can go enjoy Hollywood, and I'm like, excellent, this is fantastic. And then he hands me an envelope, a manila envelope with a stack of cash in it. I'm like, is this how you pay actors? What is this? And he's like, it's your per diem. I say, but you told me this food truck over here, everything's free, right? And the hotel, they're gonna feed me and everything's free. So this is for food? And he just looks at me and he's like, yes, it's your per diem. Just go. Get out of here. Get out of my face. And I'm thinking, acting is easy. This is fantastic. This is what actors do. This is simple. He takes me back to my hotel, my driver. I have a driver now. And it's lavish. I mean, it's marble. It's really, really nice. It's the nicest hotel I've ever been in. There's fountains and gilded framed art. And I go up to my room and it's not a room. It's a suite. There's multiple rooms and a remote fireplace. In California. And I have a private hot tub on the roof, and it's just insane. And I'm like, I live here now. This is my home, this is my castle, I live in Hollywood, I'm an actor forever. But I sit down for 5 minutes and I get bored. I'm like, I gotta get out of here. Five stars can only entertain me for just as many minutes. I'm like, this is Hollywood, I'm gonna go adventure. I walk down to Sunset Boulevard, and I go to this place called Kitchen 24, and I sit down. And this girl my age comes by and sits next to me and introduces herself. Hi, I'm Kiri. And I say, hi, I'm Joshua, and we trade conversation, and I give her this whole elaborate story of how I wound up here, and she's like, that is insane. I'm taking you out tonight, and we're gonna celebrate. I'm like, okay, I'm a local now. This is all falling into place. This is how it happens, right? And we go out, and we tear up the town. I take my mob money, and I'm offering to buy everybody drinks, and it doesn't work. Kiri pays for the first round, her friends offer to buy the next, and the next, and the next, and we're just all of a sudden all dancing, going club to club to club, and the whole night is free and fantastic. And I wake up, and I'm in my hotel room, and it's filled with smoke. And I can suddenly hear in my head all those safety warnings and videos my mom made me watch when I was a kid, like stop, drop, roll, how do I survive this? And my head is pounding from all the alcohol and dancing the night before. And then it slowly occurs to me that it's not on fire, it's not smoke, it's mist or steam, and the shower's running. And so I go explore, and I'm thinking, who's in the shower? No one, it's empty. And then I recall what happened the night before. I got home, I felt disgusting from dancing my face off, and I wanted to take a shower to rinse off. But then I got thirsty, and I went back to the bed, and I passed out in my clothes. And the shower ran all night, the hot shower. I must have used 3,000 bathtubs of water, and California's on fire and in a drought. But that's okay, because I'm a celebrity and I can do it now. And so my head's pounding, every step is another knife in my brain, and I'm like, I just need some air. I need to get some air and get some food. So I walk back down to Sunset, and I see Kiri, and she's working again. And she's like, you look like garbage. Because I did. And I can hear my mom's voice in the back of my head. Right? Just go home. Rest. You got a big day, 6 a.m. tomorrow. You got to be a big actor and deliver your lines. And then I hear a slightly louder voice that's like, no, adventure, this is Hollywood, go explore. And I do it all again. Flash to a few hours, and I'm at the Rainbow Bar, I'm partying, they give me a name, and I go to the Viper Room, and red ropes are pulled aside, and it was this incredible, amazing night. There's 100 stories in that night alone. But I wake up again, and I'm in the same hotel room, and there's no smoke or anything, but the phone is ringing off the hook. It's my driver, who's been in the lobby waiting for me for hours. I'm gonna miss my call time. So we rush to the set, I'm late, and so other people are going first, and it drags on and on and on, and it's later in the day. And imagine the worst hangover you've ever had in your life, but you suddenly have to be on stage in a studio with 40 people hanging on your every word, and there's lights just blaring down on you, and you have to be excited about taxes. And I don't have lines, these are just my authentic answers to stupid animal questions, right? But I'm so exhausted and hungover, and I just give them really lethargic yes-no responses. Do you like taxes? No. I'm trying not to throw up at the moment, okay? And the director, because they paid a lot of money and put me up in this hotel to get me here and deliver their commercial, is trying to eke out any usable response. And he says, what do you do in your free time? I don't know, I rock climb. He's like, that's great. His eyes light up. He's like, we're gonna move the camera down to a really low angle. I want you to pretend like you just climbed to the top of a mountain, and I want you to raise your arms up and say, I'm on top of the world! That's how he does it. That's how he wants me to do it. And I tried, I honestly tried. I gave it my best effort, but instead of that, it came out a half question defeat. I'm on top of the world? And he says, thank you, have a nice day, and I know what that means. So I walk off stage, and I swear I heard someone say under their breath, we're not gonna be able to use any of that. And so I go back to Spokane, and there's no driver waiting for me at Spokane International. I go back to my regular life, and time goes by, and then the commercials air, and they're great. They're black and white and slow motion, and people do make taxes seem engaging and entertaining. None of them are almost throwing up. And I realized in that moment, I traded something in Hollywood. I traded a good performance for that authentic experience, getting to live like a rock star. I had the full Hollywood arc. you know, all the way to failure. And I get it. I get it. I get how Hollywood can sink its teeth in you. It felt really easy, and it was fun. Red robes pulled aside, rock star treatment, fast friends, free everything. But I realized there's also something more important than all that. Reading your damn contract and residuals. I didn't get any of that. I texted my friend. He said he got paid every time the commercial aired. He said it was in the contract. So, I didn't get my big Hollywood break or my payday. But I have the story, so I'm on top of the world.
Pivot Stories, told in order by Ryan Tucker, Kate Burke, and just now, Josh Porter. Tomorrow night's Pivot Stories on the Bookshelf will be told by Tyler Hobbs and Brent Birch.